Hi everybody, welcome to EDF Action Campaign Academy. This is module 4, Raising Money, and we have with us today a prolific political fundraiser, Kathy Gasparin, who's going to introduce herself and then give us a little presentation on how to raise political dollars. Kathy, take it away.
Thank you, Morgan, and a thank you to 270. Really appreciate the work you guys do to prepare candidates. I am happy to discuss my favorite activity, which is raising dollars for campaigns. As you mentioned, my background is in campaign fundraising. Since 2004, I've done 8 cycles of political campaigns, federal office, both for president and for Senate, as well as gubernatorial. So I'm gonna go through this presentation that I've given before for candidates. We are assuming here that everyone's starting from different places because of the level of office that they're seeking. Certainly municipal races are very different from statewide, very different from federal, but we are assuming that everyone here is coming at it as a first-time candidate and really putting together their plan, their donor list, their fundraising goals as a first-time candidate. So we're going to walk through the types of fundraising, making a plan, setting up a world-class organization. One of my favorite phrases is fundraising is certainly more of an art than a science, but setting up the operation behind it and really effective systems are really what separates good campaigns from not-so-great campaigns in terms of fundraising, and incorporating some best practices. There certainly are evolving tactics that are really helpful, and incorporating some of those will be helpful for your campaign. So the fundraising tactics and tools, this is where we really incorporate 3 different components of all fundraising. We have different strategies for these 3 different types of dollars that are raised. Major donor, which is what we consider basically individual relationship focused. Major donor certainly does not need to be a major dollar. Major donor is soliciting on an individual level to someone. So on some campaigns, when the limits are incredibly low, that could mean a $250 donation is considered major donor. Some races that can be considered $1,000 or even $10,000. Marketing is actually including a wide grassroots type of fundraising, which is, includes direct mail, telemarketing, and digital is a whole other track. So as you can see, Major Donor has different tactics within event-based. This is giving a deadline. This is having someone host an event. This is having a moment where you're convening all your supporters at one place. They're fabulous for giving a deadline and for really giving an organizing point a focus for your fundraising. Call time, which is just, you know, using exactly that, the candidate's time, which is one of the most limited resources on a campaign to directly reach out to supporters. This is something that all campaigns need to prioritize and dedicate, you know, often the best advocate and the best person to convince someone to get involved in a campaign is the candidate themselves. A finance committee program, this is where you have a basically leadership group, an organization that is set up of people that are deeply invested in the campaign and making it successful, and utilizing the synergy that comes from engaging some of your top supporters to go out and tap their own individual networks to be advocates for your campaign, to engage their concentric circles of friends to get involved. These are so important on so many races to empower other people. So it is not just the candidate who's doing all of the outreach, but it is individuals who take on the campaign as something that they're passionate about, that they're a part of. It is an incredibly powerful program when it's utilized correctly. It's really time consuming, but something I hope you will consider doing. The grassroots is giving people on an individual level to host their own house parties, to you know, take on a $10, $15, $50 house party, and really do a large scale engagement in a community. This can be done as a part of the field program, as a part of your outreach in the community. And I like to say grassroots fundraisers are the ones where truly no contribution is required. We consider event-based fundraising something where a contribution is absolutely required and it's expected, and it is not to be confused as a fundraiser to anyone who would be attending the event. Digital, many campaigns are stepping up their involvement here, and I know 270, you guys do a fabulous job at helping someone build out a really effective digital strategy that includes email, digital ads, social media, a really active profile that continuously showcases why, really takes advantage of the timely moment where someone wants to get involved, and can really help tell the story of the campaign. It's certainly something that takes a lot of effort, but is a really important tactic for really driving home fundraising. And then marketing, this is where these are really effective tools at building a list. The Bernie Sanders campaign did a fabulous job at this. The Obama campaigns, both in 08 and 12, you know, actually raised about a third of the money overall from direct mail telemarketing. In the $40 million store we had in 2012. These were all contributions to the campaign. These were, you know, a great investment that folks do. And we hope with anyone who gives from a marketing program, they're not giving just once, they're giving again and again. So these are expensive tactics largely, but they're really worth it in the long run because you're building a massive list of supporters that can be a great base of donors to continue to visit again and again. Organize and operationalize. So this is where I think most campaigns tend to jump in and not sit down and create a really thoughtful strategy from the beginning on fundraising systems. You need to determine your goal. You need to manage expectations both internally and externally towards that goal. And you need to really methodically track your network, organize your contacts, and how you will develop relationships and solicit contributions, have a really fine-tuned, efficient system for follow-up. I'm sure that we've all been in a situation where we have met someone, we were really compelled to give, but no one actually followed up on that enthusiasm with an action. And so having a really fabulous, well thought out system for tracking commitments and making sure that they actually go from pledge to in hand is so important. And systematic prospecting. And no matter how great your network is, almost everyone needs to eventually talk to people that they may not know already directly. Having a system for bringing in new people, finding those concentric circles of support, and continuously refreshing that universe. So you're always expanding. Any campaign that doesn't continue to expand, and I know I actually have learned this phrase from my friends in field, ultimately dies. And so especially in fundraising, you need to continue to engage your existing donors. Your most likely donors are your most recent donors, but you always need to bring new people in and create a community and engage. I think one of the greatest reasons why people get involved in a campaign, even on the fundraising side, is the community that is created. And after every campaign, and I've done three presidential campaigns, one of my favorite things, win or lose, is the community that continues to exist after a campaign and will forever be galvanized to support other candidates, to, you know, reunite for celebrating what was accomplished, and hopefully continuing to support the overall cause. So creating a fundraising plan, I would encourage you to sit down and have a really frank conversation on what's necessary. No campaign, unless you're an unlimited self-funder, will have unlimited funds, most campaigns will have enough to get the job done. And it's really important to know what that number is. It's important to do research on what has historically been done in the district to understand, you know, seek out the report of the previous candidates, go back 5 or 6 years. I mean, sometimes a pattern really can't be seen unless you can see what has happened in comparable turnout, in comparable midterms, in the same district in a presidential year even, sometimes where that's the highest expense. Sometimes there's new districts that might not have an exact comparison, but understanding what comparable candidates your peers have raised. It's important to know what your opponent's raising. I think from a comparison, and it tends to be something that motivates donors to know what the opposition is doing, your primary opponent or your general election opponent, it's important to have a framework of what that means. It's also a great tool for any candidate to embrace where the money's going. It helps with your own confidence on knowing how the money is going to be spent and how much you need to have to win. One of my favorite phrases is actually from our finance chair of the Obama campaign. Great candidates don't necessarily lose, but great candidates do actually run out of money. And I work for campaigns where we have outraised our opponent. I have worked for campaigns where we've been outraised. The amount of money that you raise does not necessarily directly correlate to winning. However, great candidates that can't be viable, that can't run a campaign, that can compete, that can get the job done, do lose. And you don't need to look far to see countless examples of that, of great candidates that fail to be able to put together the resources to be competitive. Map your network. This is where every candidate and their immediate support network should sit down and map exactly who they know, who they want to engage, finding individuals that can go out and also deepen your network through introductions. This can be done really methodically. There's a lot of great tools now that can actually help with that. But you know, a simple Excel spreadsheet, a Google Doc can actually really suffice. You don't need a really sophisticated CRM database to do this. So the tools and fundraising networks that are available to all candidates are quite different depending on the race that you're running. There are systems that help you with compliance, like a fundraising database, like NGP, that can help with the reporting. They certainly can make candidates more efficient. There's a great tool like called RevUp. Both Democrats and Republicans use it. It's relatively cheap. It helps to do some research on your own network. You can essentially import your own contacts. And it can look through existing public databases to see who has a history of giving. There are many websites that actually do the disclosure of contributions, where you can see who has a history of giving in your neighborhood, in your town. Are folks that you think would be significant donors? Have they engaged with other campaigns like yours? Always be direct and make sure that you set realistic expectations. One of my favorite phrases is, if someone commits to raise $50,000 and they raise $25,000, that's a huge disappointment. But if someone commits to raise $50,000 and raises $100,000, exceeding those expectations is all the difference in someone becoming incredibly successful. And you're able to manage that, and you're able to make people feel like they're being successful, and that they feel good about the experience. So make sure you always set yourself up for success, and you set up those around you to be successful. because it'll make it a more positive experience that feeds on itself. Continuously track engagement, asks, and follow up. And this is where I would encourage you to engage someone full time who's dedicated either as a volunteer or as a paid staff person to wake up every day and to make sure that they're driving this overall commitment for bringing in dollars and keeping focused on that goal and continuously tracking progress to that goal. I'm somebody who's really motivated by numbers. And so I have always enjoyed setting a goal, meeting the goal, moving the goalpost, and meeting the next goal. And, you know, benchmarking your own success often allows you to make sure that you're able to see the progress and also feel really successful, and everyone involved in the experience will feel successful. This is an old budget of a friend of mine who ran for municipal office here in Boston. And I just put it up for an example of some of the expenses that you should consider. And it's always good to be incredibly thorough and realistic on these expenses, and also track where you are to date. So you know if you're meeting expectations, as well as making sure the money going out is matching the expenses. I will say there is literally no worse job than raising money for debt. So campaign debt is actually one of the worst things you could ever have. So really be financially responsible, you know, pay attention to the money going in as well as the money going out. Some of the finance plan samples, I mean, this is a very, very basic one of mapping out, okay, who are the individuals that I know for my reporting period, for the amount of time that I'm trying to set a goal that I could do a specific commitment from. I often say commitments are either hard, soft, or in hand. A soft commitment is, oh, I think I can do, you know, about $2,500, or I'd like to help. Certainly a soft commitment is not something that you would take to the bank, not something you would even go out and spend against. It's something that you want to track and make sure that it becomes a reality. A hard commitment is something that I would take to the bank, and I would have a very direct conversation and get a in commitment writing often, or in commitment or in writing follow up. It would be something that I would actually even spend against. It's something that I'm very conservative on generally. So I would encourage you to be optimistic but realistic. And, you know, making sure that you divide commitments between soft and hard and manage expectations and always track when money comes in so you can continuously know what is outstanding. This is actually one of my favorite visualizations of someone's network and really mapping who would get involved in the thought process of who to engage on a campaign. This is from Emily's List, from their classic Making the Dough Rise manual that they do for candidates. It's available on the internet. You can find it. So it starts with the candidate's own network. Literally take your phone, export your contacts, and map out, okay, everyone from where you went to school, to your neighbors, to your friends, to your kids' friends, to your colleagues at work, your family, obviously. Mapping out the various stages and compartments of your life and who you know specifically with contact information. Always include email, phone, full name, address. If you can start from a good list, you can always add to it later, but it's really, really difficult if you're not starting with complete contact information. And then working out from there, finding folks that share your commitment to the environment, share your commitment to your community, that that share you know, a commitment to raising awareness on you know, LGBT rights. There's some really great circles of donors that care about specific issues, and it's not challenging to identify what other organizations they give to, what other candidates they give to, and certainly other previous campaigns that they've gave to. So finding, you know, donors that care about your level of office and have previously given. There's no better reason for someone to give than a personal relationship. So obviously this is why this circle starts with people that are close to you and goes out to people that care about the same issues as you do, and then further to those who share your same opposition and to whoever you're running against, primary, general, seeking out someone who also wants your opponent to lose. The enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of mentality. And finally, power. And I think this is one of those. It's actually really difficult to kind of put a thumb on. And these are the people that honestly give quite late and in any campaign. It's supporters that may be giving towards the very end because they think someone is going to win and they see them as someone who they want to support before the election or after. You know, I think we've all seen those kinds of supporters get involved. They're not necessarily someone, you know, who has a really strong motivation, but, you know, nonetheless, they're someone you should engage eventually. So event-based fundraising, as I discussed, is, I think, one of the most effective tactics. It's why it's used. It's why people spend a lot of time galvanizing around events. I would encourage you to pick a couple events throughout the year that you can find a reason, a birthday, a holiday you like, you know, or just simply a friend that wants to throw a house party. They create urgency, and that's what people need in order to make the execution. Even if somebody can't come to the event, they can still give money and make sure you ask. The personal ask, calls and individual meetings. This is where you want to first ask someone for their support. After you get their support, you want to ask them for their dollars. And sometimes it's even more difficult to get someone to support your campaign than it is to get them to give some money. You know, I think winning their support, winning their time is often a more limited resource that people have. Empower your network. And this is where spending some time to really build a finance committee and the leadership of your friends and colleagues is really important. The commitments of finance committees are all over the map. On the Obama campaign here in New England, when I oversaw the finance committee, we had a rule that there wasn't a required minimum to be on the finance committee. We asked someone to just set a personal fundraising goal, and we held them to that fundraising goal and rewarded everyone equally for meeting that personal goal. So I would really encourage you to make sure that the committee has a goal, has something to galvanize around, but the goal is something that keeps people motivated continuously, as well as cast a wide net. Setting a goal that no one can reach is not something that's actually motivating or effective for anyone. I've always been much more in the politics as a game of additive, bringing new people, finding new relationships, making the table wider and more inclusive. So I hope you'll embrace that with your finance committee strategy. Get creative, and this is where direct mail, telemarketing, we've even done some really grassroots versions of these. That is literally having an in-house, you know, run off a letter to your supporters and mail it just in-house. Do it a really cheap way. You can do it with free hands and labor donated, and you know, running some letters that are signed personally. It is expensive to do telemarketing and direct mail with a firm, which is why most people don't do it, but it does pay off in the long run on building a list and building a really wide net of supporters. Online fundraising programs, there's really fantastic ways to engage folks online, and you know, from contests to celebrating timely moments in the news, moments for the campaign, having a focused capital campaign or drive that's meeting a set goal and ends and gives that deadline that event-based fundraising also did. Reoccurring or matching gifts, there's a reason why you see a lot of these same tactics on online fundraising as you do in nonprofit fundraising, and it's because they work. And people really do like matching gifts and reoccurring gifts. It's a fabulous way of making a supporter that wouldn't give $1,000 but would consider giving $100 over the course of 10 months, as being a really great contributor and a part of the campaign. So making these really fabulous tactics available, I encourage you to do so. So here's two samples of events. One for my friend Eric Lesser, who ran for state senate here in Massachusetts, as well as Governor Patrick. And it's just a really simple example of event invitations that clearly list individuals that have committed to be a part of the event, the time, the location, the amount. Please do not say suggested contribution for a fundraiser. It's such a pet peeve of mine. It's either a fundraiser or it's not, and it should be celebrated when it is one. You're asking folks to make an investment in your campaign, and these moments that are bringing together all these supporters is something that is really positive. Making sure that there's a clear way on how someone can give, a link, checks payable, where they send them, make it as simple as possible for someone to receive the information and to take action. I also encourage you to list prominent supporters that have committed to be a part of an event. It is a great way of building a community and also doing some great PR and showing, the wide net of support that you have. So it's a lot of work to build a host committee and to get folks to take on a leadership role, but it's really effective and can make for a really positive experience for everyone involved. Sacred call time and outreach. I discussed this before. Please dedicate some time. 8 to 10 hours a week is where I encourage most campaigns to start. Have a small enough chunk that you can get some work done, but not too big of a chunk that you're exhausted. I like to actually call after 10 in the morning and really never after 6. I found that unlike field calls, fundraising calls are better done during business hours. Call people and meet donors, when they're working, when they're able to talk, and not necessarily when they're at home with their family. It's a different tactic, certainly, than field. Keeping this time to be something that is incredibly productive, make sure you have your list in front of you with right phone numbers, with amounts that they've donated, with a focused ask, with an email teed up on your computer, ready to send to this person after you leave a message. Leave a brief message for someone to call you back, clearly with a number. And don't leave a message on someone's voicemail asking them for money unless they were like in your wedding party. I feel like that is often a call that will never be returned and just incredibly tacky. Actually connect with people and hear what they think about the race and make sure that you have their support before you're able to engage them on fundraising and ask them to do so. Prospecting, tracking, and correspondence. This is where keeping a continuous database of who you're reaching out to, tracking commitments as they come in, acknowledging those commitments as they come in, and re-engaging these donors. It's just critical. Make sure you have a one-pager on who you are, why you're running, how someone can support you, the level that you're running for, and very, very simple instructions on how they can support your campaign. I know it seems like so fundamental, but there's a reason why some campaigns fail to close a commitment to a contribution. Recording commitments and contributions, have a really buttoned up system internally, master one spreadsheet that you reconcile every 3 months or so is a great place to start. Building a community of support And that's, it can be as simple as just having a email list of people that have given you money, convening that group once a year, once a quarter, once a month, having a barbecue at your house, you know, making it very simple, but acknowledging your donors in a way that you can say you know that they have many things that they give their money to. It is them making a you and your campaign a priority, and you value that contribution. Thank you notes and personal information tracking. This is where some of the best fundraisers, in my view, are people that do individual personalized follow-up and feel like they never have to ask for money because they continuously find ways to connect with their supporters, with their friends, you know, connect with them as a parent, a human, a daughter, as someone whose kid graduated from college. You know, there's a lot of ways to stay involved with your community of support that's actually even outside of the campaign, you know, and as a human. So making sure that you're actually engaging folks for their expertise, for their personal support, for their advice, and for just their even encouragement. Now, here's a great one-pager. I'm surprised on how many campaigns literally don't have this document. So please take the time and effort to produce one. Make it simple, literally one page. This is a sample of the follow-up information, making it incredibly clear for folks on how they can get involved, having a draft follow-up sample for an event-based contribution and commitment, an email that's drafted and ready to send that explicitly cites how much someone is giving. Sorry, my computer is about to die. A thank you note sample. I like to often do thank you notes physically mailed over a certain threshold once a month, or you know, it's just a best practice to make sure that you're continuously engaging folks. There's not one of the most common complaints I hear from donors is they feel like an ATM, and they feel like they don't hear from organizations outside of the one lane that someone put them in as a donor. So don't assume that they do not want to host a house party, that they don't want to volunteer their time, that they don't want to engage your network, serve as a, you know, a surrogate for the campaign, as a public validator, write a letter to the editor, an op-ed, learn about why someone wanted to get involved and give their money and their time, and find a way to engage them and to keep them involved. These are not, you know, groundbreaking strategies, but it's really surprising to me how often campaigns move quickly and folks, even really seasoned professionals, will put someone in a silo and keep them there. And I really encourage you to break down those silos and embrace fundraising as a part of your overall engagement strategy. So again, one of my favorite visualizations of who you should be asking for money. I think that's one of the hardest things for candidates in the beginning to see. Well, who should I be asking? I love phrasing an ask as really the response is a continuum of yes. Very, very rarely does someone truly start the response after they've been asked to engage as no, take me off your list, lose my number. Almost always it's a little bit more of a continuum between no and yes. Either someone's not yet ready to commit, the timing doesn't work for them right now, they're keeping the door open, or they, you know, want to support you and really appreciate it. So making sure you always keep that door open. You aren't disengaging from someone unless they explicitly ask you to. Yes, you need to be prepared for people to say no thank you, and you should respectfully appreciate that limit. But I would often try to find a way, even if they're not able to support you financially, is to make sure you're earning their support as a voter. Make sure if they can vote for you, you do have them as a fan of your campaign, and you are going to keep the door open for engaging them as a donor later. Keep them on your email list. Ask them if you can add them to your distribution of continual campaign events so they know what's going on. Especially when someone is no, not right now, you are humbly reminded that what you're asking for is for someone to prioritize your campaign over the many other worthy causes they're being asked to support. So embrace where your donors are, and if they can't support you right now, don't close the door that they won't do so in the future. Obviously, if someone says yes, make sure you have a really great, prompt, efficient, easy follow-up, and you thank them for their commitment. You explicitly state what their commitment was. You explicitly state what the commitment is going to help you do, what it is going to help fund, allowing them to see their dollars at work, and it'll help them to stay motivated with being involved. So making an ask, embrace where the contribution is going, and this is where all candidates should know how and why the money is spent. You will never feel bad on asking someone to invest in you if you know that the money is not going into your bank account. It's running an incredible operation to turn out voters. And so I really think that you shouldn't be intimidated. You should be humbled by the experience, but not intimidated to ask someone to make that investment in you. Know your audience with that confidence of who, why they're motivated, what their capacity is, what their giving history is. You can craft an appropriate ask. Sometimes just having that information allows you to embrace the confidence to be able to do that. And number three is listen. Yes, you are a seasoned candidate and you have you've asked many people for their support door to door at thousands of events. But what most supporters actually want is for someone to listen why they want to get involved. So actually take the time to hear what motivates them and to meet donors where they're at. So practice making an ask. This may seem incredibly simple, but call a friend of yours. Call someone that you know would give you honest feedback. And practice, and then pick up the phone and actually call someone that you are going to ask for money, and make sure that you're doing a direct and effective ask to do so. Build some urgency, give a deadline, give a specific direct ask, and then wait. And I think one of the hardest things for candidates to do sometimes is to just make an ask and to wait for someone to respond to it. Following up is simple, but making sure that the process you have and the efficient way of tracking that is really needs to be a priority. Here are some other best practices on making an ask. Have your 1 to 2 sentence, your 15, 20 second, this is why I'm running. And you've done it on the candidate side. It's pretty much the same approach, but I think framing it as I'm running for my local school board because I know that all day kindergarten is something that needs to be a priority for our schools. And you know that this is something that is going to make a difference to students for generations to come. It's a generational shift. Whatever the motivation is, phrase it as it's going to cost $100,000 for me to reach 50,000 voters that live in my community. I need to build a campaign that will allow me to get my message out there and have the staff and community that will get this done by the primary that is May 6th. And so hope you'll consider supporting my campaign at $250 by the end of the month. I would really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being a great friend and ally, and I'm truly honored to have your support and to have you consider making an investment in my campaign. There's a lot of ways to engage donors. This is some examples on guiding the conversation, on how the funds will be used, on the larger fundraising goal. I know it seems ridiculous, but the average congressional race is about $2 million. So my race for state representative, that costs about $150,000, is actually a great investment. And this is going to allow me to have a platform to make a difference in our community. You know, that it costs about $20 to have a yard sign, you know, for everyone on my block. So help me make that investment, you know, understanding where the money's going, understanding why someone wants to give, being able to make a confident pitch continuously to a great universe and, you know, is going to allow you to build the machine and the operation that will allow you to win. So, Morgan, I hope this works and happy to answer any questions.
So thank you so much for the presentation. Do you have any stories or anecdotes about how candidates, especially new candidates, should be thinking about raising money and how they should start having conversations with donors and how they should think about how much to ask from donors?
Yes. So as I mentioned, sit down, map your network, looking up someone's previous contribution, certainly, and there's many states that have public disclosure databases that this information is really easy to access. You can see the previous history of someone's donation. One of my favorite anecdotes on this, though, is from a prolific Boston fundraiser who actually focuses on women in fundraising. She was one of the first women in the 90s to be a really active national fundraiser. Her rule of thumb was to ask someone to make a political contribution that is equivalent to the last pair of shoes that they bought. It's, you know, an amount of money that for something that they clearly valued, but not something that was onerous. And it was a great rule of thumb for, I know even for myself, that evolved from when I was, 18 years old to now 35. That number for me has shifted, and I know that a lot of women will nod and embrace that. That is a bit of a fun way of looking at it. But it, you know, in all seriousness, they're just because someone has a lot of capacity is not the greatest indicator that someone is going to be your largest donor. There is not a direct line between capacity and willingness to give. You need to find that motivation that actually gets the person to be more involved. So, you know, ask for something that is aligned with what they have previously given, but don't necessarily under-ask. You know, aim to be high, but in the ballpark. I hope that helps.
So, Kathy, how would you, when can an enviro message be really helpful in raising money from major donors or from small donors? How can that be a helpful thing for a candidate?
Yeah, I will say enviro donors, in my experience, are some of the most savvy and really just a joy to work with. On the major donor front, I have found that enviro-focused donors get the long ball, understand that There are immediate electoral wins. There are setbacks that are going to happen over a long journey. Tying your message to why this race, campaign, level of office fits into that narrative. And, you know, if you have a really tough primary or tough general, how you're moving the larger conversation, the drumbeat for progress in your community on an issue is really motivating. On the lower dollar grassroots fundraising front, this is where timeliness is the most critical piece. The exact same message sent when your enviro issue, the reason that these donors are motivated, is in the news, connecting that directly to your campaign is the most effective way of getting someone to understand the why, but also understand the why now. And closing that gap is really the most effective thing that they can do. So when you see that your opponent has denied climate change is real, or when you see that the incumbent is not standing up for safe water in the community, whatever the issue may be, calling that out in a timely way and using your message of why someone needs to get involved is the best way to make sure that the grassroots donors are understanding how this is all interconnected.
Great. So how would you kind of adjust your approach with enviros and enviro groups? Because they can kind of, looking at those circles of benefit, straddle many different places. They could be aligned on ideology. They could be aligned on axe to grind and hate the other guy. How do you calibrate that?
Mm-hmm. And this is where enviro donors really are, again, my favorite, because they are motivated by multiple issues and do understand that beating your opponent and removing someone from power that is actually proactively unhelpful to an issue they care about is a huge win. Even if they're not incredibly in love with your candidacy, getting someone who will be an advocate for the issue they care about is a win. Ultimately, a lot of the work that I've done is talking to these donors positively about what you are going to do for the issue that they care about. Yes, it's motivating for someone else to lose. And yes, it's motivating for someone to support you because they want to, they want to be behind the winner. But I think the reason that most enviro donors came to the table is because they're motivated by this issue. They get the short-term implications. They get the long-term implications. And talking positively about what you will do, I think is actually the higher focus and should remain as the positive focus for your candidacy, because that's when they're going to stick with you in the hard times. It's reminding them why they came to the fight, and even when times are tough, they're going to stay with you.
Horrible that this is the reality, but what could or should a campaign do to prep for the potential and the financial impact of something like the Koch network or fossil fuel interests dropping into your race, or as an IE or backing your opponent? They've invested in so many, even the tiniest races, and it's a big deal on these issues.
And this is where reminding yourself that the most effective dollars that someone can give to a campaign, are directly giving to the campaign themselves. Dollars given and spent by these, secret dark money, non-disclosed donor entities have to buy really expensive media. They can spend massive amounts of money, but reminding your supporters that campaign dollars given directly to the campaign get the best rate in paid media, go directly to funding the boots on the ground and folks knocking on doors in the neighborhood. I think proactively calling out super PAC and dark money, when it happens, is helpful. But I also think, preparing your campaign for, you know, an unexpected outside expenditure is nearly impossible. I've talked to candidates that have had a lot of money spent on them at the very end of their race. And they're like, oh, I wish I would have kept $50,000 to counter this, this, you know, unexpected deluge of TV ads or radio ads. But you know what? Like running the race that you set out to run, staying true to your strategy, staying true to why you got in this race and being very direct and explicit on what motivates you, on where you stand on the issue. I think we clearly saw this in multiple cycles now. The candidates that win are the ones that know where their North Star is, and people don't question, their judgment. I think people can disagree on the issues sometimes, but ultimately, if you feel confident in how you're spending the money to run your campaign, why you're running, and why you think you would be great in elected office, voters tend to be pretty forgiving I might not fully agree with you on X issue. I understand where you're coming from. So I think like really just setting yourself up with a really confident campaign that, you know why you're running, and you know how you wouldn't respond to an issue, and you stay true to that. You don't, change whichever way the wind blows. Is probably the best way to counter something that is unpredictable, as someone coming in and spending an unheard of amount of money late in a race like that.
Great. Well, I think that's it for us, unless you have anything else, Trevor.
I have one last question. So when you're, especially for first-time candidates, when should they be thinking about how much money they need to raise? Is this something that they should think about before they even, as they're thinking about initially running for office? Is this something that they should think about like right after they declare, before they declare? When should they start having the first kind of conversations internally about how much money they need to raise?
Mm-hmm. This is where I'm going to come off a little cynical here. This is any candidate who's seriously considering running for office, this should be a part of your due diligence. I actually think this should be something that is taken into consideration. So you actually know, okay, how many votes do I need to get to win? How much money do I need to raise to actually get my message across? That's the number you're looking for. So I think if someone's seriously considering running, this should be a part of your due diligence before you totally jump in. I think some candidates pursue, with an exploratory committee at various levels of a race of, I wasn't sure if I wanted to get in this race because I wasn't sure if I could raise the money. I think, unfortunately, that confidence is something that stops a lot of people from jumping in. But having the information, knowing what you need to raise, and then taking some time to methodically plot out how you'll get there will allow you to be successful. I think, you only get one, maybe two chances. Sometimes, people run three or four times and continuously lose. But I would hope that most people would take a methodical, thoughtful approach to running and really do some due diligence on how much it would take to be competitive. I'm not saying you need to be that greatest self-funder, unlimited resources. You just have to have enough to run the race that, you want to run to win.
Great. Thank you so much, Kathy, for your time. This was fabulous.
Yeah. No, thank you guys. And good luck to everyone out there. Really appreciate you prioritizing the Enviro, as a priority for your races. So thank you for your work.